Okay, welcome to the Bloggers Rights Panel. My name's Scott McGowan, and I'm here from iOnAdult.com. Essentially, we'll just start. We'll introduce ourselves here, and then we'll move along from there. I think one of the bigger focuses of this panel is going to be where the bloggers come in the overall scheme of things as far as the flow of information that you may not get from newspapers and things of that sort. So I think that's going to be one of the biggest topics we get into. I know that there are also legal things that we'll want to be talking about, free speech issues, things like that. So we really don't have anything particularly planned out because this is going to be something that I'm not going to sit here and talk at you all night or all day, I should say. Most people in here have blogs, I take it, of some sort. Whether it's a live journal, show of hands, please. Who has a blog? Yeah, you know, how many of those are live journal or blogger or something of the sort? And how many other people just have independent sites of their own that are weblogs? Okay, great. So we've got a good cross section here. Well, let's start off. I'll introduce myself. Again, I'm Scott McGowan. My website is an adult news and commentary blog. It's something that we put together a couple of months ago. I work for a larger company called AEBN, which is Adult Entertainment Broadcast Network. And essentially, I'm a professional blogger. That's what I go into work every day. I sit there 8 hours, and I gripe online, and I get paid for it, and it's pretty friggin' awesome. To my right, we have Mistress.
And I just I have a live journal in conjunction with my website, which is a webcam site. It has some adult content, but not as much as it used to. It's mostly just for fun, and the blog is in connection with that. And I'm approaching this at a learning level as well. What you can do, what you can't do, impinging free speech, can I get fired for blogging, things like that. I'm hoping that we'll get the chance to discuss that in this panel, and that's pretty much where I'm coming from. And I'm a total amateur at blogging. Well, I say I have a live journal, but I also have Zanga, Dead Journal, Blogger.com, and a couple of other that I think I've forgotten that I catch up with occasionally. So I spend about six hours a day on various blogging sites. So I don't get paid for it, but I do. I am bad. I do blog a lot from work. So that's where I'm coming from.
Okay, I'm Sherry Priest. I also have a live journal in conjunction with another website. The other website is mostly because I'm a writer by day job, although it's not nearly as exciting, and I also write novels. I have a 3-book deal with Tor, and the first of those is about to come out in October. And my publishers wanted me to have a real web page for grown-ups, which is funny because it keeps getting blocked by net nannies, and there's no content. I have no idea. But mostly I have a live journal, and I do get to update from work quite a lot. I work for .com. It's a data aggregate service that does online warehousing software for big companies. So since I'm online all day anyway, it's a deadline-driven business where as long as we get our work done, they don't care what we do. And about 3/4 of my coworkers also have live journals, and I'm surprised not to see a couple of them here, to tell you the truth. So I'm lucky on that end, and I spend more time on it than I should, but it kind of ended up getting something of a following. And I actually was discovered for book sales. Both times that I've signed book deals have been because somebody came across me on LiveJournal. So you never do know who's reading. And I have several other friends who are also in the same boat. Like, how many of you are familiar with The Very Secret Diaries by Cassie Clare? That led to a book deal for her. And she has a different journal now. She doesn't update that one anymore. But she and Holly Black are good friends. And so it really does work for people. That's how I got into it, and there you go.
Well, we seem to hit on a common theme here. I think that's where we'll go first, and that's the blog in the workplace, which has really become kind of, it's almost as common as checking your email, or it's really not frowned upon in the office these days to pull up your email at a break at time or at lunch or something like that. But blogging is still to some capacity kind of frowned on, and I know from personal experience in my office place, you know, I'm an adult industry, and I've been involved with it now for 4 years. But even in our office, every now and then, you know, there comes a time when the IT department comes in and is like, all right, we're going to block these sites because there's, you know, it's just like fantasy football or anything else. You know, there's a lot of time wasted on it. So the question that's being begged a lot of times is, you know, do I have a right to do this on the, you know, in my workplace? And I think the common, the answer for the most part is going to be no. And the reason being is because anytime you're using company equipment and company time, you know, you can't necessarily do personal things there. People have been fired over it. You know, I've had the unfortunate task of, for both blogging and electronic games and things like that, where people have had to be let go before. And I was the guy that had to drop the axe, and I wasn't happy about that, because I know for a fact that, you know, a lot of these times, you know, it's just like checking email. As you know, you check it, you do it real quick, you're done. You know, you don't screw around. But in the workplace, you have to remember that you're using equipment that's not yours. And you also have to remember as well that it's not as private as you think it is. Anyone who works in an office knows that there's an IT department there, and through the utilization of tools like VNC, which is a software that, you know, allows you to tap into another computer and various others, you don't know who's watching. You can never tell. And, you know, your computer's not necessarily going to lag or anything like that, and someone's watching. And people say a lot of personal things from work. I'm not looking at you for any particular reason.
That's okay. No.
But I mean, do you have any experiences with that? You're at work and.
Yeah, actually, like I said, I'm lucky in that I work in a very laid back environment, and that's great. We roll into work in our jammies and barefoot, mm-hmm. and who cares? But you know, you do forget. My boss recently, a year or two ago, eloped with a woman upstairs, and they had a baby. And that was great. We're very, very happy for them. That was wonderful. But he announced to us in the company, he was like, well, guess what? We're having a baby. She's 4 months along, and yay! We all clap, and everything's great. But she had been having some problems. She was 40 and had some trouble conceiving. And so apparently they hadn't told everybody else about that yet. When I made a post saying congratulations to Pal and Tammy Blue, who are expecting their first child. And he did not find out, his brother-in-law called them and was like, ha-ha, we know your secret. And he didn't find out until after the kid was like 6 months old. And he did a vanity Google and turned it up, because his brother-in-law had been looking for him online, came across my page, realized that I lived in the same city, because it's not a real big place.
Right.
Knew who it was and was like, well, I'll be damned. And that was how everyone found out that they were going to have a baby.
Well, yeah, you're more on the corporate end of things,
yeah,
I know.
Another issue that has not applied to me, because my day job is I work for an attorney. So obviously I'm not going to post about the cases that I deal with or anything like that, because that's, you know, some serious stuff. But I have read about cases in the past where people have posted on their blogs what they're doing at work, and they have gotten fired over it.
Dooce, she was like the first famous one who got fired and made a career out of it. It's just like Dooce, or I don't know how you pronounce it. It's dooce.com. She's a stay-at-home mom now who very famously got fired a few years ago for blogging from work.
Yeah. So you have to be really careful. And another thing, and I know, because I know a little bit about how Scott's office works, I know for a fact that there are organizations where a lot of different people, maybe not some not so mature as others, will blog about, you know, in this ass at work, you know, and then the ass at work goes and reads it, and then the next thing you know is you've got a whole company with you know, everybody at each other's throats because they read, you know, somebody ranting on their blog. And I think a lot of bloggers tend to forget that even if you have it friends locked or posted privately, there's nothing private on the internet, you know. So
and your friends know people who aren't your friends.
Yeah,
and we'll talk
and we'll copy and paste. Yeah. Really bad when that happens.
Now, here's one of the good parts about blogging in the workplace. A lot of companies have set up internal blogs, mm-hmm. And the reason they've done this is because it exchanges information quickly.
But we're going to do it anyway.
Well, what essentially what they'll do is they'll set up a central system to where it's more like a bulleted board system, actually, rather than a web log. But it can more or less works the same way, whereas, you know, if you're completing a project that is of interest to different departments, you know, you throw something up there and says, you know, this project is complete, but we still have to do such and such, such and such, such and such. So you've got this centralized place where you have all of these logged issues. We have one that's similar. It's an issue tracking system called JIRA. Is anybody familiar with JIRA? It's a really cool system, and a lot of how many corporate America people do we have here?
Sort of.
Okay. This is something that do we have any IT professionals in? Okay. This is something that you guys might want to look into if you work for a large company. It's called JIRA, G-I-R-A. I believe it is. It's not an open source software or anything like that. It does have to be bought, and it is expensive. And works on a pretty complicated database, but if you've got the time to put into it to get it started, it's a great way of keeping employees in touch with each other and issues tracked. And it's one of these things where essentially you'll know in you can create an issue. You'd say, okay, you know, the bathroom door is broken by the break room. We'll just use that as an example. And then you have three or four people that will be given permissions to see this information. It will be privileged information, or it may not. And then you have this ability to go, oh, okay, well, I'm going to take this project, and I'm going to see it through to the end, and when I'm done, I'm going to mark this as completed. So anybody, corporate America folks, you know, this is a good way to get in good with people, because people love these tools that people can use other than micromanaging. So that's where blogging in the workplace has, that's not personal, has really, really come a long way. And, you know, instead of, you know, sending out memos, you know, we all, you know, did you get the memo? No, I didn't get the memo. This way, no one ever has an excuse. So you got something good on the horizon there that you can take back with you. So again, that's I'm not selling the product, but it's a great software. It's JIRA.
At this point, we've kind of covered the workplace blogging thing, but I think because this is such a wide topic, maybe we should take questions from the audience and see where they want.
Sure.
Where they want.
I'm gonna yeah. Let's
this,
let you guys
you
dictate
to,
this.
You know, contribute because me personally, I'm up here learning just as much as y'all are. So you know, if you can help me out, that's always.
We'll start with the cowboy hat.
What would you say are the top five threats that bloggers have to be concerned with? I know it's hard to come up with a list. What would you say are like the top five threats that bloggers need to be concerned with that they could incur because of their blogging?
Don't do anything illegal and post about it on the internet.
Yeah, anything that compromises your company's confidentiality.
Oh, well that's a given, though.
Yeah.
No, I mean stuff
A lot of them are givens. Intellectual property issues. On the list.
We had a panel on this earlier, but reposting adult content. Say you go to a model's website and you see an awesome picture and you take it and you put it on your website. Well, if it falls under the definition of sexually explicit content and you don't have that model's ID and everything, you're facing a potential jail penalty of 5 to 7 years.
That's interesting.
I believe. Lots of people don't even think about that because, I mean, how often have you gone to a website, copied and pasted, and put a link up? Found this here, you know.
How does that fall into, because there's fair use, and then there's
I look for Creative Commons licenses.
And fair use isn't right. Fair use is a defense.
Mm-hmm. In this situation, no, because this is an anti-child porn law.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Basically, it's U.S. Code 18, Title 2257. And basically what that says in a nutshell is that if you create or display adult content of any sort, which is sexually explicit, and despite the fact that they say that it has to be actual sexually explicit and that is hardcore, not just nude, but I wouldn't put a nude photo up. But Essentially, what it says is that if you're putting up adult content, you're displaying it or you're creating it, you have to have the identifications on record as well as model release forms and all that jazz. So that's an anti-child porn law.
So if you have an 18 and over wall up on your blog, or
doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. And a lot of people don't think about that because it's a relatively new thing that has just come up.
The last couple of weeks, people have been trying to comply with it. Yeah. Breaking their necks and bringing down sites, trying to comply with it.
Okay, before I pass off the mic, libel.
I can address that. essentially, it's very simple. You can parody. You can have an opinion of someone's character, but you can't print lies.
It has to be true.
Or you have to have a source.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who it is.
It's true.
If you go on your web blog and you say Scott McGowan, I'm not a public figure, you know, you say that, you know, Scott McGowan is actually a 40-year-old 6-foot-tall bald man. Technically, that's libel because that's not who I am, and frankly, I don't like you calling me that. So that can be libel.
Because what's wrong with being a 40-foot?
No. 40-year-old. I'm just saying I don't like it. I like being 27 with, you know. But no, it's that's what it boils down to. You can't print lies. you have to have a source. If you're going to print something, if you're going to print fact, you have to print a source of some sort, be that your own, but then you're responsible for it. But parody, you can rip somebody, you know, a completely new hole if you want through parody, and you're not printing lies. It's just it's satire, and you know,
and that's protected.
Absolutely.
Anything that falls under fighting words.
Well, I mean, like I said, you can express your opinion about someone's behavior all you want. Yeah. That's an opinion. Everybody has the right to that, and everybody has the right to express that. It's when you get into again, it's just whether or not something is true. And if it's libelous, if it's slanderous, if it hurts somebody's feeling or defames their character.
Or if you can prove that you thought it was true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where should we put the bar for public figures in the blogging space?
Well, this is something I've been reading about a lot lately. And it's sort of to your question, it's sort of not, but it is very relevant to today's political arena. Is there have been, at least on LiveJournal, there have been several bloggers that have posted things like, the president is an ass and I wish somebody would blow him up. And they have found the Secret Service showing up at their house, at their jobs, talking to their grandmother. And all they meant, they didn't mean, you know, that somebody should blow him up. They just meant that,
someone,
you know,
got mad and didn't like them, called in a threat.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. Well, they have to
follow up all threats. And anytime anyone says this person made a threat against the president, the Secret Service has to follow it up. And every case I've ever heard about, they've just been like, "We're sorry, this is really stupid. We just have to show up and ask you." And okay,
exactly,
bye.
Right.
Yeah, but then you have like Jay Lassen, who was recently fired. He posted, God love him, and I do. He created a series of photoshopped images showing the president being killed. And posted that they were clearly false images. They were obvious. They were crappy Photoshop. Love you, Jay, but it's all right. Posted them online, and he worked for a university, and they found out about it. And after the Secret Service came by and decided that no, maybe he wasn't just full of crap, and they were going to give him a lot of hell, he had to delete everything, take everything down, and then he got fired. And even though the university couldn't prove that he had been doing it on their time, didn't matter. They didn't like it, and they fired him.
So to get back to your question about public figures, in this current political arena, you should probably think about what you're going to say.
Have a good lawyer.
Have a good lawyer.
What point does...
Okay, that's like 7 questions, and there are a lot of hands.
That's fine.
Okay, actually, this chick over here has had her hand up a lot. Nobody's paid attention.
A friend of my mother's posted a lot of really nasty things on her blog about coworkers. She's
dumb.
Not
brave woman.
She's not a bright cookie, but and then she made the mistake of showing it to someone at her office. It's not it it did not insult that person, but he told the rest of the office.
Well, she deserves what she gets.
Right. Mm-hmm. What would you recommend under that scenario? I still think she's an idiot, but what could she do to save face?
Delete it and find make another.
Yeah, I was going to say, she doesn't have a lot of recourse there.
Find another job.
Essentially, I mean, that's a situation to where if you create tension within a workplace, that's something you can be fired for. Yeah. It's not insubordination, but if you are if you can't work with your employees through some action, be it inside the workplace or outside the workplace, you can be let go because and you won't have a lot of recourse there. So she probably doesn't have much of a chance there.
I think it qualifies as harassment.
Probably. Yeah, and I think what you said was pretty much it. You know, when you do something, you know, to that effect. Best thing to do is just take it down, get it down quick, and make a lot of apologies. Because that's another thing about blogging that we tend to forget. People read this.
Exactly.
You know, people do read this. And you tend to get a false sense of security behind a keyboard and a monitor. You get a lot of bravery. It's kind of like, you know, drinking liquor, you know. All of a sudden you think you're, you know, 6'8 and 300 pounds. Well, you're not invincible. And just because you're behind a monitor and a keyboard. Mm-hmm. Let's go over here.
Two things. One, going to the libel issue, if you've got a
source, one thing I've learned about is something called assertion language. Mm-hmm. If you hear something and you present it as if it's true, as if that's true from your own knowledge, you need to be very careful about saying, I heard this from X, or according to this website source, they say this, versus I know this from my own knowledge.
That's exactly right.
But the other thing to think about is the place to be especially careful on both sides is a shared blog. If there's more than one person posting, and even worse, if you can't tell automatically who's posting what, then you have to be very careful who you're associating yourself with, because
that's like a shared bank account. That's just a bad idea.
Absolutely, because you can get in a lot of trouble. And if somebody's reading it and it's inappropriate, every single person whose name is on that is assumed to be, you know, you're all in there together.
Now, in a court of law, however, that's when things like IP addresses are going to come into play.
Yeah.
Because most people, you know, who do have shared blogs of the sort. You know, they're not in the same geographical area. So, you know, it's not as if they're going to be using the same computer to do the same blogging. So what eventually happens, if somebody does something of that sort, you know, that's when you bring out the IP address and say, it came from there. And that's where that'll come in.
Yeah, that actually came into play with me with someone who stole some content off of my site and submitted it to a local paper as his own material, and they didn't check it and published it. And in the course of proving that, what it came down to was that we could prove that it had been submitted from his home computer. And, he didn't know who I was and had no clue, really, because you've been commenting. He didn't have an LJ, so he had to comment anonymously. Was signing his email address
right.
And name. And I've never heard of her. I have no idea who she is. And yeah.
I think we had another one over here against this wall.
Yeah, I was just going to say the gentleman in the hat asked about where to set the bar. He's gone, but I'll say anyway. I'm a journalist and a member of Society of Professional Journalists, and there's a legal defense fund for journalists. And the past couple of years, they've been working on a definition for bloggers so that the same shield laws that apply to journalism can apply to blogging as well. So to kind of answer his question, I think that when you take on a blog, even if you are expressing, you know, your personal interest, your personal opinions, you're kind of becoming a citizen journalist in a way. So you kind of have to stay within those traditional journalism boundaries if you want to have protection under any type of shield law or whatever. So that's kind of
well, and if you want to be taken seriously too.
Sure.
Just as a matter of pride, check your sources and
right.
Be careful of your wording. And
yeah, so be mindful of libel, and if you're going to blog, you know, take some time to learn about that and what that means. And that's all I was going to say.
I'm going to move back there for a second, but this is something else that I want to bring up very quickly, and that is that instead of having independent newspapers, weblogging is what's replacing that. Mm-hmm. And that's why blogging has become of such interest. You look at Matt Drudge, who is probably the most famous blogger on the face of the planet. And he is, while a lot of people think he's a schmuck, and you know, a lot of times I do too, you cannot dispute the fact that this guy has an effect on what we as a collective online community think. because this guy has a lot of sway. And he is the closest thing to a pirate newspaper that's going to exist and be influential. So this is the future of blogging right here, mm-hmm. is that some people, you know, listen, I'll put it this way. I'm not qualified to be a journalist. I'm not. My education just doesn't stack up. But given what I have, given this opportunity to publish my work personally and have as much reach as I care to put into it, you know, between, you know, Google ads, you know, things like that. You know, this is something where the individual with just a few, you know, not that much money can really, you know, rival a major newspaper with your own opinion.
And they have.
Right. Go through the roof. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was one in the back. There's a couple back here, actually, I think.
One question I had was, there was an incident recently on LiveJournal in which an individual posted adult materials. Mm-hmm. After a certain period of time, the individual said, "Oh, by the way, guys, I'm 16. Given given that the rules of the community clearly state you got to be over 18, you got to at least say you're over 18, mm-hmm. with what you're talking about the internet law, does the fact that the person basically prove that they are under the age of legal consent, does that mean that anyone who ever viewed that material, even if they assumed it was over 18, are they now legally liable or otherwise in trouble? If someone basically put something on their page and says, this is in fact true, and later on says, oops, it wasn't, is
well,
everyone
she did it
who
through a community. The community will be held accountable for it,
yeah,
which is why they go to such great lengths to establish in like a, you know, bad porn or bad sex or any of the communities that do things like that. They will check your credit card. They will, if they find out you're under 18, they don't just have you banned. They delete your journal.
Right. But they don't actually. But the act of actually viewing an entry does not in any way indemnify you if you had precautions were taken that the person was of legal age.
Yeah.
No. If you accidentally saw child porn. Yes.
Well, I was going to say. I mean, you know, you're on Kaza and you pull up, you know, what you think is a, you know, a 1973 poster of the Bee Gees, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got, you know, a bestiality picture. You're not liable for that. It's a it's not, you know, you didn't fool anybody. You were fooled. So it's kind of, you know, so you don't have to worry about that. Now,
in terms of journalism, though, if a journalist posts, because we've in recent times there have been arguments of, was this in fact a real story? Was it not? Who claimed to be first? If I say, I saw something on Sherry Priest's post that says this. Sherry Priest says, I saw this on Eric's post which said this. If you keep going back and go to the original original poster who knowingly lied, is the person who knowingly lied liable?
Most likely, yes.
Most likely, the
now,
original person.
And you and this is the thing. You as if you're going to post this, just because you're not a professional, doesn't mean that you shouldn't have the brains to check things out. If you see something that you question at all, you know, be sure to really question it. And especially when it comes to explicit photos. And I can't harp on this enough. I run an adult news blog. And there, you will not see a single exposed breast. And the reason for that is because, you know, even though I know where the material is coming from, there's a great burden of liability there with record keeping and things of the sort, and it's just not worth it. So I would be very wary of any user-submitted communities with, you know, any type of adult content. Even on LiveJournal, you know, with, you know, naked pics and, you know, those communities, things like that.
Well, it's not just adult things either, though. Not terribly long ago, I had to be very, very careful. My alma mater, of which I'm not terribly fond, had a fire. And the first thing that came out, and it's not, it's a private Christian school that isn't necessarily very popular, and so I'm accustomed to seeing a lot of crap about them. But there was a fire, and the first thing that came out was, well, there were no functioning sprinklers in this building. And my first thought was, well, why are they? No, I lived there for 4 years. I know they have sprinklers. Don't be ridiculous. So I argued at first. Come to find out, the building had been grandfathered in because it was built in 69 and it had fake sprinkler heads to make everybody feel better.
Oh.
So I posted this because it's true and because I lived there and because when I had bunk beds, every time I climbed into the thing, my hair would get caught in the damn sprinkler head. So I knew for a fact. But I had somebody from the Hamilton County Medical Emergency Service email me and say, you know why that girl died in that fire? Because when the fire department got there, they looked in, they ran inside, and they went, sprinkler systems, we can tap into their water, we don't have to bring our trucks. So they got the hoses out, they got ready to go, they turned it on, and there was no water. So then they had to go back to the trucks, move the trucks around, hook them up, bring water, and it took 45 minutes to put out this fire that shouldn't have taken 12 minutes. I can't prove that, and I didn't post that.
Okay, now this goes into something interesting here. This is where you have to be a little bit more professional. I think you'll, if you want to get in on this after, because I'm glad you're here actually. Now in that situation, could you have asked that person that sent you an email? This is where you say, is this on the record? Can I report this?
And she said, well, because it was a woman who works with one of their teams there who came in afterwards, and she's like, actually, I don't have to. If you just go get the pictures of it, you'll be able to see for yourself. And when I had seen on the news that morning, the fire marshal came out. He was pissed. He was like, I can't believe there aren't any working sprinklers in this building, and rah, 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 rah. And so I knew some of it was true, and what I knew was true I posted, but since that was off the record,
yeah.
I'm not taking that bullet.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's somebody who has an official government email address, that doesn't tell me squat. That could be a secretary in the basement.
And, you know, one other thing on that front is that be careful when you quote people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big killer here is, you know, you can report that, so-and-so said such-and-such, but they need to be saying it to you or they need to be saying it to another source. Then you can quote that, and that's fine. Am I on here? Yeah.
And even if they tell you and they don't know that they're not supposed to tell you, and they say, sure, go ahead and quote me, the government agency can come back and say, well, that person wasn't in the know. That quote's not
sure.
Valid.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I mean, even if you quote someone and it's completely on the up and up and they say, sure, you can quote me, the person that employs them can rebut that, take it back, and then you're liable for printing something that was untrue. Because unless you're dealing with speaks on behalf of the fire department,
Yeah, instead what the school did was they kept saying, oh, well, we were up to code, and we were just fine, which was true. And then like, oh, well, but the firewalls held and smoke detectors all went off, also true. And no one was mentioning the fact that, and there's somebody standing at the back wall who lived there too, she knows. Hi, Jess. They had sprinkler heads in every room, and that was basically false advertising. Everybody thought we had sprinklers in the dormitories. And nobody wanted to talk about that on the news at all. And so finally, I just came out and said, no, you know what? They had fake sprinklers. Everybody who lives there knows it. They had fake sprinklers. And that's why they didn't go off.
Let's get to this guy right here. Oh, he's
sorry.
Been, for
he's
long
been
long.
Very patient.
I run a mobile blog. Take pictures all the time, and there's several different locations. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's been at vacations,
sure.
Public spots and stuff like that. I'm been curious, especially in this post 9/11 world, what your rights is as a photographer for a moblog like that.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on your lawyer.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, seriously,
sure.
People will take you off of city streets and tell you you can't take pictures of buildings or of public works, and it's not true, but you got to fight with a cop for it and go through the system to prove it.
There's a great photographer's bill of rights. Excuse me. There's a great photographer's bill of rights online. I don't know the address right now, but it's very easy to find, and I think it's posted by the ACLU or somebody who's an advocacy group.
I carry a couple of their cards. No, you can't.
No, it's
back.
It.
Get
I mean, it's
me.
It's portable. You know, I mean, it's very convenient, and if you want to know what your rights are, they're right there.
Sherry, didn't you have a recent experience with something like that, with the electric company?
Yeah, actually, that was where the "don't do anything illegal and put it online" comment came from.
Exactly.
I have this little problem with urban trespassing. I like to get into abandoned buildings and take pictures, and I'm not supposed to. But you know, I have a code of ethics about it. You know, take only pictures, leave only footprints. And I took only pictures and left only footprints. But we got into, me and the guy over here in the black shirt, got into a turn-of-the-century power substation, back before TVA's big old poured concrete building. And I'd known about it for years, and a lot of people got in there, but, you know, it was locked. It's locked, I don't go in. I will enter, but I will not break and enter. There's a fine line in 20 years between breaking and entering and trespassing. But it was open one day, and we went in. And it's four stories, and it's just so freaking cool. So I took, like, 45 pictures, and I cleaned them up. And so far as I knew, nobody even owned the thing. I knew hypothetically someone owned it, but it has not been occupied for 40 years. And it was literally hanging wide open. When we walked in, we ran into two other trespassers coming downstairs. We did. And people had been squatting there. There was spray painted on a wall, squatters' rights. So I'm thinking we weren't the first people to do this. But as it turns out, I have the only interior shots of that building taken since 1933. This is important because a week and a half after I posted time and date stamped photographs on Flickr, a 16-year-old boy and his skater friends went in there. He fell, and now his family's suing the guy for $12 million. And I'm sorry, what? Yes, and he's a quadriplegic now. But he has some. He's going to get some motion back. He probably won't walk again. So while I have sympathy for that, at the same time, when I heard from his lawyer, I was not real happy with that. I get a lot of traffic, and if you just Google the name of this actual building, I'm like the first thing that comes up.
Right.
And so I had this full set of photographs. The kid maintained that he had walked in, and it had been wide open. And everything else he said was a lie, and the rest of the pictures prove it. But as soon as he woke up from the coma, he said, "I walked in." And the guy who owned the building said, "No, no, no, I had it locked." Well, I have this giant-ass picture that shows the front gate hanging open and the front doors hanging off of the hinges. And the lawyers like that. Yeah, what they don't like, though, is that his story doesn't add up. He was in there skating. It's poured concrete floors, yeah. You know, and that's fine. I was in there in Mary Jane's in a skirt, and I didn't get hurt. I don't know what he was doing. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
But his story is convoluted and doesn't hold up. And if they look at all of the interior pictures, I can pretty much prove he's lying. The problem is it doesn't matter. He wasn't supposed to be in there anyway. So it doesn't matter if he was in there taking pictures at 8:30 on a Saturday night down the street from the skate park with two of his friends, or if he was skateboarding and fell through a plywooded over window and fell down in the old turbines. It doesn't matter. His family can sue anyway.
Right. Yeah.
But since I made very clear to the lawyer that I thought he was a lying little schmuck, I'm hoping they won't subpoena me. And I told him they could just take the pictures.
Yeah.
And so, yes, you do have to be careful. And I shouldn't have been there. You know, I know that.
I take it there was a little bit more to that question that you wanted to add.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I've taken pictures at several places.
Yeah.
But they're mostly like, you know, airports or at, like I took some at Disney World last year.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you just always wonder because every once in a while you see people giving you strange looks.
Yeah.
Well, if it's private property, too, they can ask you to leave, and that's fair game.
Mm-hmm. I'm from Charlotte, North Carolina, and about a year and a half ago, there was right after September 11th, so probably more like 2 years ago, there was a gentleman of Saudi descent who was taking pictures of the buildings uptown, and some of the people reported him, and they arrested him, and it turned out that he was, in fact, working for Al-Qaeda, which was proven, and he was deported. So I think a lot of that, I think before September 11th, I don't think people would have really questioned you taking a picture of a building. But in this post-911 world, it is something I think you should probably be concerned about.
Like you were talking about earlier with that others.
I saw his expression.
That's right. When you're talking earlier about this other expression, I mean, I've been taking pictures at Dragon Con. Mm-hmm. There are several costumes, you know. Look, where do you draw the line?
Right. Too little you know, just personally, I don't think taking a picture of somebody walking around in a hall costume is anything to worry about. Now, if it's a young lady and it's 3 a.m. and she's wearing, you know, Aeon Flux around her waist, you know, then you're getting into
maybe
the adult content and you might want to ask for an ID. But I mean, as far as like taking pictures at Dragon Con and posting on your blog, I really
really don't think you have anything to worry about. Although there's been situations where people have, you know, don't necessarily want their employer to see them as Aeon Flux at 3 in the morning.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter, though. It's on the back of the badge. If you pay for the badge, you are permitting anyone here to take pictures of you.
Not to mention the fact that one of the things that allows things like Girls Gone Wild
to
occur.
Look at the back of your badges.
Occur.
I see a bunch of people doing this.
One of the things that allowed Girls Gone Wild and things like that to go on and be so successful, not to mention, you know, the various other spin-off Mardi Gras videotapes that are sold and things like that, is that, you know, when you're in a public space, as long as you kind of build this, you know, as a thinly veiled documentary of some sort, then, you know, whatever's going on here, you can shoot and you can film and you don't have to have consent to use their image. Now, if, like, for instance, at Dragon Con or something of the sort, you know, if you see an open door because the lock's been pushed, you know, and keeps the door from shutting, you know, and you, like, stick your video camera through or something like that into a bathroom, then you got a problem. Because you have to have consent for things like that. And or even in just any private situation, you do have to have consent if you're going to, you know, put pictures up of other people and things like that. And most of the time, it's not going to be a problem because it's not going to be a compromising situation. But there, some people get ticked off about, you know, using their image. I know we got another couple questions over here. Let's get to this guy. He hasn't asked anything yet. Blue shirt.
Who loves it?
Just a couple of things. I'm in the entertainment business, amongst many other things, amateur archaeologist, several other things. But anyway, one of the things that I want to point out is there are two different kinds of public figure. Okay, you have the public figures who are out there in every day, and that's who they are. They're Bill Clinton, they're George Bush.
All right.
Then you've got folks in my industry, for instance, I'm in the wrestling industry. Mm-hmm. Okay. When the press people walk into our locker room, it's no, unless they're in character. Mm-hmm. Do not print their names. Their real names are on these badges. Do not print them under any circumstances. And once they're out there on the floor, you can do anything you want with them. Once they're in character, you can do anything you want with them. But we're walking around today with a lot of folks that are only public under pen names and stage names. And if you post anything with their real names on them, expect to hear from their attorneys.
Well, and yeah, and you bring up a good point. And it depends on what you're doing, however. From my experience, and, you know, I for the most part, I've never done that. And the adult industry people that I deal with, you know, unless it's already common knowledge of someone's real name, like Rob Black, he's a guy, he's a real scumbag, and you know, his real name has been printed all over the place. So I don't mind printing that. Now the only time that I think it would even remotely be a good idea to print somebody's real name is if you're working on a legitimate story. There's no reason for a blogger, a casual blogger, to ever print somebody's real name in their blog. It's just not a good idea. But if you are, to some capacity,
pointing at me back there. Shut up.
If you are, to some capacity, you know, doing a legitimate story that's going to be read by, you know, real readers, and it's one of those things where it's reasonable to the story. Like, for instance, you know, a CEO of a company working under an assumed name, and he's embezzling money, and you can prove this. Go ahead, use the guy's real name.
But expect to be hearing from somebody's attorney subpoenaed.
Yeah, but, I mean, that goes into controversy anyway. You know, if you're going to do something controversial, you're going to have legal representation. It's as simple as that. Luckily, I'm in a position to where if I do something completely out of hand, our lawyers are going to take care of me because I work for, you know, a really big company. So I have that luxury, but most casual bloggers aren't going to have that.
You've had your hand up for a while, and then we've got one in the back there.
Let's go to the back. That guy's, he hasn't asked a question yet. I'll get back to you, I promise, though.
Okay. We've touched a couple of times now on blogging things that maybe we shouldn't have blogged, bad-mouthing a coworker, or you know, pictures of somebody who may or may not have been legal age. And your answer to the original question was, you know, first of all, take that stuff down. My question is, Google caches web pages. There's the Wayback Machine. How do you really get something off the internet if you really, really regret putting it up there?
You don't.
You go like this. You're shit out of luck is what that is.
However, I do think, now this is not a legal opinion, but I do think that if you show that you attempted, that would go a long way. For instance, you know, somebody finds it in like a Google cache kind of thing, and then you go, but I took that down 4 years ago.
Google doesn't cache images necessarily unless it's still on your server. If you take the images off of your server, even in a Google cache, they will not appear.
Or move the address or whatever.
Yeah.
Move whatever directory the image is in. So there is definitely a different ball game between images and text. Text, you really have to watch out, and that's the basis of blogging for the most part is text. So that's what you really have to watch. Images, you know, you don't have to worry about those quite as much, but depending on what they are, obviously. But, you know, if, like, for instance, if you're running a blog site and you're taking pictures to Dragon Con, like you were talking about, you know, and you've got a picture of, you know, someone up there and they just really don't want their picture up and they ask nicely and you take it down. It's probably not going to show up anywhere else. You know, it may show up, maybe cached for just a little while, but I don't think it'll stick around for very long at all.
Supposedly, there are issues about personal information. Some of the people in LiveJournal have their names and addresses and contact information. Some people apparently discovered that Google caches it, and so they friends locked it, but it was still available.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Supposedly, you can contact Google and indicate to them, this is no longer available, it's friend locked, or otherwise, please either remove or update it, and Google will do so. Mm-hmm. But you do need to specifically contact them, specifically mention it.
Right.
Okay, he's had his hand up for a long time.
On the Google cache, actually, I've used that before, and it actually does work. But I wanted to kind of shift the discussion for a second to another issue. And actually, Nicole here might be better equipped to answer the question. One of the things of the McCain-Feingold campaign finance rules is now the FE, from what I understand, I've got to give you what I think is true, and then you guys can...
I think I know where you're going with this.
I think I've heard of this.
The FEC has apparently ruled that if you endorse a candidate or a position or anything like that on your weblog, because you're not a broadcast journalist or a newspaper journalist or, you know, a real-life journalist, you're just a private citizen, your private, you know, journaling that can be counted by the FEC against that candidate, the candidate you're favoring's campaign budget, basically, for the purpose of campaign spending limits.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and that's not going to be enforced.
I have heard of that, but I haven't heard of
it. It's not going to be enforced at all. It's one of those things where, now, for somebody like Matt Drudge, yeah, they'll look at something like that. But there's no possible way of enforcing something like that because the sheer amount of bloggers out there. And I'm not just talking about LiveJournal and you know, in the centralized services. All of the people out there that just have personal websites, personal weblogs that they have at, you know, their own domain, no way they're going to be able to enforce anything like that. And so it makes it very irrelevant.
Okay, but I mean, if you're not Andrew Sullivan or somebody like that who does it for a living, that's so if you don't have print or broadcast credentialing, on paper though, you're still considered to be, you know, at least theoretically an arm of the campaign when you post something.
That's one of those really convoluted things.
Again, what I'm hearing is you can't that they won't enforce it or that they can't enforce it, but so theoretically they could. Theoretically, though, they could.
Well, it's really muddy because, like, on one hand, as a blogger, you want certain protections and you want certain credibility. But along with that comes the other side of it. Well, if you're going to say I'm a credible source, then they're saying, okay, we're going to treat you like one. But I think that the best point made is how much traffic you're driving in and, like, whether or not it's worth even going after you or bringing it up. So if you're not, I mean, if you're just getting a few thousand page views a day or a week or so, you're not really going to be a...
And I also think that was kind of an intimidation tactic that was used. And there were a lot of those little things that happened over this past campaign. You know, it's just one of those things where they really did, because the vast majority of the online, you know, community is pretty liberal. People who, you know, the it's, let's face it, you know, mom and pop, and you know, in the middle of middle of Kansas, usually don't have internet access, you know, and aren't out there. Most of the young folks that are embracing technology right now, the younger generation is usually a little more liberal. And that's, it was more of just kind of a, you know, nice little shove to the chest saying, you know, hey, you can't do this to us, you know. It's just a poke in the chest saying, yeah, we can do something about this. We can do something about all you liberals.
I think it's just another one of those things like 2257 that is having a chilling effect, is the term we used the other evening. It's going to make people reconsider whether they're going to put red state blue voter on their blog, you know. So I think that is far more important, is the effect it's having over whether they're actually going to enforce it or not. It's like, are you going to take the chance, you know, CYA type thing. You've had your hand up for a while.
Okay, going back to the names thing, personal names as opposed to stage names. Now, I know in a lot of personal journals, when they talk about other people, they use made-up names or just initials. How safe is that? Like, can you still be saying, like, yeah, that's pretty much useless? Or is it better to use?
In my personal experience, it's kind of weird. Anytime I make a post, like, and that person made me feel like this, I'll get 15 emails going, am I
Did
that
you
person?
Oh my God.
I didn't know you felt that way, you know? Yeah. So sometimes it's kind of a fine line between putting that person or, you know, AS is, you know, well, who's AS? Well, I'm Ann Smith. I don't even think I know you, you know?
They take it personal.
People tend to personalize what
they
read.
They're afraid that they might have done that. Oh, God.
Yeah. So you have to kind of walk a fine line between saying you're that person and pissing off all your friends. Because you do have
Maybe
a readership,
give it to
whether
yourself
you realize
if it's
it
that
or not.
Bad.
Well, and this kind of goes into the nature of screen names and why people use them rather than their real name. And it's because we like to enjoy a certain amount of anonymity. You know, we don't want to be held accountable for everything. So that's why, you know, people will have three or four online screen names. It's just, you know, nature of the beast. I think it's absolutely necessary. While you have all the right in the world to discuss, like, for instance, let's just say that I stand up here and tell you, but my real name is not Scott McGowan, and tell you my real name. I'm allowed to do that, and I can do it online as well. And if I do that, I'm therefore all but giving someone the right to republish my real name and things of the sort. So they're really that's all really hazy. I think it's more of a courtesy than anything, and I think it's always smart because people, they don't want to be called out. And, you know, they want to be able to enjoy a certain amount of anonymity, or if, you know, they're somewhat a public figure of some sort. People do have, they may not necessarily have a right to all of the privacy they want if they're putting things in a public forum, you know. Sorry, guys. But, you know, you do need to be respectful. You do need to play nice. And whether you're doing this just casually on LiveJournal or if you're doing it for a living, you need to play nice because it will bite you.
Mm-hmm. How about legally? Like, if you use a made-up name, are you still as legally responsible?
Absolutely. Because it's still going to be tied to real documents with your real name. IP addresses can be traced back to them.
If you name someone else,
you'll
still be held responsible for...
It depends on whether it's harmful or not. Printing my real name, it's not probably... The worst thing I might get is, someone might kick my butt because I'm such a smart aleck and I call a lot of people out. But if it can be proven that it's harmful, like if it does cause harassment. There was a case recently, and where a band named their album the address of the mayor of a town, I believe it was. It was the address and phone number, and that was the title of the damn album. And it caused a lot of harassment.
It was the guy's name and his address.
Yeah, and it caused this guy to be harassed a lot, and they were held accountable.
Even though it's probably public information that you could get in a phone book,
yeah.
But it was used for harmful purposes.
So the same thing, you know, can happen to you, yes. Ah, okay. Do you have a question over here?
Yeah, I did. Quick question. I don't know much about the background of this story, but the National Guardsman who posted a blog about the during the war, mm-hmm. he lost a rank over it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What are the rights of soldiers
in the army? Freaking none.
You are U.S. property.
You're U.S. property.
If I come home and put disparaging remarks about the war, my personal experiences. You know, again,
it depends on if you're still enlisted. I was an Army brat, and it doesn't matter. They own your ass.
Even the 1 week in a month, you still waver that right.
If you are active, my stepmother's an active reservist.
Active, but
if it's
Guard.
Not active anymore, I don't know. But once you're active, once you're in, it doesn't matter. They own you. They can do whatever they want to you.
Well, you also have the issue of if you have privileged information, if you're whether you're in or out, you know, if you're out, you still have privileged information. You're still liable for that, and you'd better hold on to it. If you're no longer enlisted, if you're no longer enlisted in any way, shape, or form, I mean, technically, you still have the right to the opinion of whatever it is while you're in. The question is whether or not it is considered behavior becoming of a soldier.
Military law is so different from civil law.
Yeah. When you're in, essentially what it boils down to is they expect you to – you are U.S. property. You're property of the United States government, and you are to act a certain way. You signed on for that. So you signed a lot of rights away there.
Including your right to privacy.
Mm-hmm.
As I think the Don't Ask, Don't Tell law pretty well underscores nicely. Hey, you don't have the right to that privacy anymore. You don't belong to you anymore. You belong to them.
I mean, I can't describe it any better than that a soldier is United States property.
This gentleman,
Scott's looking fussy over here.
I wanted to ask something too. Does anybody here know about the recent Apple case with the trade secrets? Yeah. I had hoped to have another speaker in here who could speak on that, and she wasn't able to make it. So, if you know, I think a couple of things about it. Can you say anything to it?
A couple of things I know are the same couple of things you probably know. There was this underground website that, you know how people are really into Macs, get really into Macs. There are websites that all they do is they go around and publish rumors about what Steve Jobs is going to do next.
Mm-hmm.
Product ideas, product specs, rumors, you know, crazy, you know, everything from stuff like predicting the iMac to crazy inconceivable stuff like them moving to Intel, which, of course, they ended up doing. Stuff like that.
I have one.
Anyway,
there've
been a bunch of rumor sites. The most famous was Mac OS Rumors, but there's another one called Think Secret that was starting to get some really, really good information in advance about what Apple was going to be doing. Now, this is we're just about at the limit of what I know about it, but from what I understand, they published some material about an upcoming Apple announcement of a product. They published some very accurate material. Apple took them down. They sent in their lawyers, and they basically said, you're leaking trade secrets. You're leaking, you know, privileged Apple information, and we want to know where you got it, and we want you to shut that down. Now, I know they took it down, but I don't know anything about what's gone on since then. I was coming here. I was kind of curious about that because I'm in IT.
Well, it probably falls under intellectual property and copyright laws because it's somebody else's private property that you are making off with.
Yeah, but it's another case of a guy on a blog who's claiming he's a journalist, but although I know you were saying before we're trying to create a system where your group is talking about a system where bloggers are basically independent journalists and have the same kind of newsman shield kind of protections. This is another one where I think there's a difference.
But you still have to play by the rules.
I mean, yeah, and that's the other thing is we don't know all those rules.
Yeah, I mean, that's the challenge, though, is, a newspaper can't print
blogger can't print that and be protected. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you can only go into so many unknown sources, as we've seen with, you know, the situation with the CIA agent that was exposed. Using a source like, you know, it's like an unnamed person said, it's a bad idea. Don't do it. It's not that it's not legal, because in most instances it is, but it's not a good idea, and it's not reliable information. Nobody cares if some, you know, some unnamed person, they want to know who said it.
Besides all that, even journalists have been called up before a judge and say, we want to know who this unnamed person was, and they've gone to jail to protect that information.
Well, yeah.
Right. So there again, if you're going to set yourself up as an independent journalist, as a blogger, then you should reasonably expect that you could potentially be called on the carpet if it's something that people are interested enough in to pursue.
It feels like Microsoft, they have much more money than other people.
Another interesting phenomenon that's going on in the blogging world right now is the anonymous blog that... it's really kind of an interesting thing. I think a lot of us remember Washingtonian. She was a young woman who worked in D.C., and she kept a journal of her sexual exploits with government officials. And these things are popping up all over the place. There was one in particular that I had to deal with a couple of months ago that I think I reported on it. There was a girl who claimed that she had been an underage porn star. And it set off quite a buzz because with all of the protections we have in place in our industry to prevent this from happening, it was one of those things like, how did this happen? So people tried to dig around and, you know, it was really hard to find out. Luckily, it was one of those things where they'd make, you know, 4 or 5 entries and then there's nothing else. And it was also a pretty unrealistic story. You know, it was someone who claimed to have a contract with a producer, and yet she was still underage, and that her mom signed it for her, which is not beyond the realm of possibility because, you know, parents are screwed up too and do some screwed up things, and it's not always a nice world. But things like this are popping up all over the place, and this is one of the most interesting things. Washingtonian that I mentioned earlier, she got in quite a bit of hot water I think it was 2 senators and one appointed government official. And needless to say, they wanted us hushed.
Nobody wanted to admit that they were the one.
Yeah, because they were all married. They were all married, had kids, and they were, you know, screwing around with this, this office worker. It's not unsimilar to if Monica Lewinsky had, you know, kept a blog, which actually she did. It wasn't a weblog, but she kept a journal. Now imagine if this had been out on the web somewhere. You know, and used initials and things like that. You know, it would have, when that story really broke, it had gone through the roof because somebody would have found it. These things come up very quickly. But this is the most interesting part, I think, of what's going on out there, is because there's so much stuff that can be dug up out there. And, you know, God forbid you ever become a public official or something, because there's no such thing as privacy anymore. Because we are the press now. We are the press. Everything we do is now subject to being broadcasted to the world. So people aren't necessarily carrying around webcams all the time, but our actions definitely going to be under scrutiny. Anybody that has a live journal can, you know, tell everyone that, you know, I made out with that girl last night that I probably shouldn't have. And that's actually true. But anybody who saw that would say, hey, I saw Scott McGowan up there at that party kissing that girl. Oh, he shouldn't have done that. He's going to be in trouble. Oh. So remember that because you're sitting next to a press member right now, in a manner of speaking, you're sitting next to press, all of you. So that's one. I think that's the greatest phenomenon that web blogging has taken on, is that you have a collective world press now.
And one of the other interesting phenomena that I observe, I'm primarily LiveJournal, I keep going back to it even though I have other blogs, is just the way you can connect with other people with blogging. For instance, right now there's a LiveJournal called Katrina Kane, and it's a collection of people who are in New Orleans, who lived in New Orleans and still do live in New Orleans. And there's people on there posting webcams of people looting and things like that. And to me, I'm getting much more valuable information from reading Katrina Kane than I'm getting from reading CNN. Oh, yeah. So people often don't realize that what their actions, what the actions that they're doing right now, even if it's just posting that I had a bad day at work, you know, or my boyfriend's an ass, you know, even if it's just like that, people do take that seriously. And I don't think half the time bloggers take themselves seriously enough. And I think that that can get them in trouble.
Oh. Bloggers, but that doesn't mean necessarily mean that the people we live with or our friends, you know, ask to be on the web.
Right.
And
right.
Like with me, like, you know, I may use initials sometimes, or if somebody has a very generic name, but, you know, like other people said, they know people that I don't know. And,
yeah.
you know, sometimes I find out, oh, friends of friends have been reading me and I didn't even know that, you know. And I mean, not that I really try to be mindful, not put anything out there that, you know, it's just out to hurt anybody. But, you know, we still have to live with people who, they didn't ask to be online, you know, and so I try to keep that in mind, you know,
yeah.
and I think that helps me keep from writing anything that, you know, would just sever relations with people.
Yeah. And weblogging, like I said earlier, the one of the things that's probably the most damning thing about weblogging is the fact that we do get that sense of bravery, you know. That's
a
big thing.
It's
you know?
So easy, you know. My boss is an idiot. Send, you know.
Yeah, and
it's so easy.
And yeah, so it's, you know, we tend to forget when we're sitting alone, you know, and nobody's around. We do tend to forget. I mean, I do this for a living, and sometimes, you know, I'll print something and go, damn, I probably shouldn't have printed that. It's too late now, of course, and luckily I do have, you know, lawyers behind me if I ever get in too much trouble. But, you know, most people aren't going to have that benefit.
Mm-hmm.
We had one up front here.
I was going to say, let's go from the flip side a minute.
Okay.
Someone's written something very bad about me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I want it gone, okay? And I ask the person, I say, hey, get rid of that. And they don't. It's the next step that I would have to do, and how would I know if this is even, if I can even do something about making them take it away?
Well, the first thing you do is, you know, if as long as they're not saying anything harmful, as long as they're not lying, as long as they're just complaining about you personally, ignore it.
Okay.
It'll help you get a thick skin.
If it's so bad that you feel it has to come down, your next step would be hiring an attorney.
Or approaching the moderators of whatever they're posting from.
Well,
like, you can go to LiveJournal and...
Now
their idea of harassment and yours might be different.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's a big gray area.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I mean,
depends on if you're friends with a moderator or something like that, you know.
And you also, and you, there, I mean, there's always, you can always report harassment to a local police department. If it's legitimate harassment, you know, where you're being threatened and, or anything of the sort, yeah, you can always go to the police and say, you know, hey, this is a problem.
If there's an IP address, you can get that and report them to their internet service provider as well.
Well, and also, I mean, if it's done with, you know, something like a LiveJournal or something like that, you know, and there are privacy concerns on LiveJournal's end, then you know, the police can always serve a search warrant of sorts,
and
information warrant.
Read the FAQ of the individual service they're using if they are using a service. For example, on blogger.com, I found a gentleman who had linked to my site, and he was sending me a lot of traffic. So any site that sends me a lot of traffic, I go check it out and see what kind of traffic I'm getting. Well, this guy had linked me under Chicks I'd Like to F, And he had pictures of these little girls about 10, 12 years old modeling bathing suits. And so I looked through Blogger's FAQ, and it said anything. And he had stolen the pictures from their websites because it was copyright. It had the copyright on it. So I looked through Blogger's FAQ and found their report department, and I reported this person, and they made him take down the questionable images of the little girls and the ones that were copyrighted. Now, I couldn't do anything about my link. I just blocked the traffic coming from him. You know, it's not really that big a deal. Traffic is traffic. However, you can do stuff like that from an individual perspective, and sometimes the easiest way is to just read the service's FAQ and see if it qualifies under something that could be arguable. And
yeah, he has the right to be mean. That sucks, but yeah. He does. He, she, it, whatever.
Yeah.
The first thing is absolutely to decide whether or not this just makes me sad or whether or not it's actually threatening and harassment.
Well, think of it – always think of it in real-life terms. I'm going to make this quick. We've got about 10 minutes, and I know there's a couple more questions back there. Just think of it as if you went to the market and there was a cork board up there and somebody took a picture of you, stuck it up there, and said, "This woman is mean to small children." Think of it from that perspective, because the first thing you'd want to do is try to figure out who posted it up there, but you'd probably go to the manager of the grocery store and say, "Hey, listen, I'm taking this down. This was up here, and you need to be aware of this." So look at it from that perspective. Always look at it from a real-life perspective. It's not that tough. Always look at it from the perspective of just, what if this happened to me at the grocery store? And go back there. Yeah, yep.
Just anecdotally, I had a situation about a month ago with the real name thing. I've been Diva since 1994, Diva Marie, to be specific. Online, stage name, pen name, everything. And I recently had a situation. I run my own blog on my own website. Somebody said some really nasty things about Diva Marie, Diva Marie, Diva Marie on their private live journal. And at the end of the live journal, said, "If anybody can send me my full real legal name's address, please contact me here." Well, this is just a warning to the people that think that their live journals, even though they're private, are actually private. A friend of a friend of a friend forwarded me this email, via email.
Yeah.
And I contacted the person whose live journal it was and said, "This is an official cease and desist. Don't let me get my attorney involved, because I will. I've got family and friends and jobs and things like that to lose if people know who Diva Marie is. I was a professional dominatrix for many years." Right. There are things that you don't want your dad to find out. So she has taken it down since then. But, it's feel free to use that as a story from now on, because, even if you think it's private, it's not. Your friends are not always your friends. So.
Well, it's kind of like the rule. We were joking the other day, me and some writer friends of mine, about the rule is, if someone has said something nice about you, you will never get your hands on it. You will never find that good review. But if somebody gives you a bad review or says a bunch of crap about you over here, 50 people are going to hand that to you in under an hour.
And this kind of came up here. Don't threaten websites with lawsuits just because you don't like something they've written. No, I know. People. I get so much hate mail.
If you're prepared to take it that far, be aware of what the kind of expense you're going to be getting into. It's not cheap.
Exactly. let's put it this way: I'm a jerk. I'm not going to lie about it. I'm a jerk, and it's what I do, and that's how I write, and it works for me. And I get hate mail all the time. And I was like, I'm going to call my attorney. It's like, no, you're not. again, it's just kind of like, think of it as in a real situation, Are you really going to call your attorney? No, you're not. So you hear somebody says, "God, that woman that just passed us is such a big butt." Are you going to sue her for that? No, you're not going to do that in the grocery store. You're not going to go call your lawyer right there in the by the Cheetos. And, so... Don't you have to remember that, just because, it sounds like a good idea to write something really official sounding and, my father's an attorney. Actually, he's an attorney general for the United States of America. He's John Ashcroft. Nobody buys it. nobody buys it, and it's not gonna help your cause any. In fact, when you bait people like me by sending me a letter saying that you're gonna sue me, I'm gonna give you even more business. So, and that's not, and I'll never do anything. I will never try to hurt somebody. That's one of the differences between me and most of the adult press. You've got other bloggers in the adult industry that really will try to hurt people. I'd never do that. I will call you to task on your actions and your opinions and how you've handled a situation, but I'll never try and hurt someone. But when you bait me, we all know how this is. I mean, if you've got, everybody here has a blog.
It has whiny blogging friends. You can't say that about me. You have to take that down.
And you know what it's like. It makes you mad when somebody when somebody says, you hurt my feelings.
Suck it up.
And
hurts my feelings that you're whiny. So
yeah.
It just contributes to the cliche. Don't do it.
Yeah, but it also works both ways as well. Just because you have this forum doesn't mean you should be a jerk. It doesn't mean you should try to hurt people. And it's definitely going to come back to you if you do.
Yeah, it's just kind of the karma rule. Everybody get along. Don't dish it out, and expect to take it once in a while because you're going to.
Just remember the old adage, this is a blogger's rights panel, just remember that old adage of, your rights ending where another person's nose begins. Mm-hmm. The same rule applies in cyberspace. Any more questions out there? Because we've got about 5 minutes left, I think. And
One thing I did want to mention, the EFF has a wonderful website, and they have a blogger's FAQ. And it has very, very good up-to-date information about your rights as a blogger, what you can do, what you can't do. It has adult material. It was so huge. I was going to try to bring a copy of everything, but it just would have taken forever. But it covers defamation. It covers IP, how to deal with IP. It covers privacy, reporters' privileges, just about any question that you want to know about blogging and your rights as bloggers and your rights against bloggers, if that be the case, can be found at the EFF website, and it's just EFF.org. So it's a really good resource.
There's a lot of information out there, and but again, just because it's on the internet doesn't mean it's true. So I would definitely EFF is a good place to get information. There are other places that have good information. Free Speech Coalition is a good.
NCSF.
Free Speech Coalition is the adult end. They're an adult advocacy group. So, there's another one. God, it's escaping me right now. It sounds like Free Speech Coalition. I can't remember what it is. You also always have the ACLU. There are chapters all over the United States. You can always give them a call if you have a question, especially concerning privacy issues. There's always folks there that can talk to you. I've talked to them several times, just with quick questions. And there's always somebody there that'll talk to you. So, do you have anything?
No.
Okay. Anything else?
Anything else?
All right. Okay. I think that'll
Thanks
do
for
it.
Coming out.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it.